back home now, and doctors are warning about the risks of relying on smartphone apps for your mental health. Mindfulness apps offering meditation and breathing exercises have become some of the most popular downloads. But are they doing more harm than good? Angus Randall reports.
With each new out-breath, letting go a little bit more of the day that's been.
These kind of apps offer everything from improved creativity to pain relief, and in recent years, the number of mental health apps available for smartphones and tablets has been booming.
They are very much focused on anxiety or stress, lots of mindfulness.
Dr. Quinn Grundy is a postdoctoral researcher with the University of Sydney's Charles Perkins Centre. She investigated the most popular mindfulness apps.
We noticed that apps are promising consumers quick, easy, effortless, and often instant solutions to what they're framing as their mental health issues. So we'd see things like, you know, in just 10 minutes, you'll sleep better, or just listen, the app will do the rest and your anxiety will be gone, or track your mood every day and your symptoms will improve.
She argues such quick fix pledges can be damaging to those seeking help.
If your app has promised that you'll get better really easily and really quickly and you don't, consumers shouldn't feel like there's something wrong with them or that their mental health can't be treated.
These apps tout their healing credentials, but only a small percentage of them are created by universities or healthcare professionals.
So there was a couple from the government that we looked at, the Department of Defense, for example, and a few from some prominent mental health organizations. And I would say we had the most confidence in those, but largely they are private companies or individuals who may or may not have any background in mental health.
PhD student Yasmin Oshvar started using a mindfulness app last year.
I had a couple of bouts of anxiety and some pretty poor, I guess, responses to stress. So I decided to download one of these mental health apps.
The app she chose was highly rated in the App Store. However, it soon began increasing Yasmin's anxiety.
So you would input what you did on a daily basis into the app. So, for example, the app would ask you to rate on a sort of scale how you felt you'd done in certain areas over the day. So, for example, had you exercised? Had you eaten healthy? Had you done any relaxation techniques? If I missed out on a few activities in a day, the app would actually rate my day and it would sort of tell me that I hadn't had a good day.
Yasmin no longer uses a mindfulness app and recommends using any of these programs in conjunction with professional advice. Many of these apps offer a small amount of their content for free. Users are then asked to subscribe or pay an upfront fee to access further content. This business structure is common to many types of apps. However, researcher Quinn Grundy argues those downloading mental health apps are already vulnerable.
We would argue that mental health consumers are perhaps in a more vulnerable position to things like targeted advertising or in-app purchases or even the subscription model. So, for example, we saw apps, it would be an app about anxiety or depression, but at the bottom you have these banner ads advertising weight loss products.
She's calling for app creators, as well as moderators of online stores such as the Apple Store or Google Play, to face increased regulation.
Although developers are often the target of regulation, there's some big players, the app stores like Apple and Google, are really the de facto gatekeepers at the moment. They're the ones that decide whether an app comes to market, but there's very little regulatory attention on them.
That's Dr. Quinn Grundy, ending that report by Angus Randall.